we present Mary Morris as Hortensia in The Watched Pot by Saki, adapted for radio by Gabriel Wolfe. The play takes place just before the First World War.
So sweet of your dear cousin Agatha to bring me down here with her. Briony Manor, such a refreshing change from the dust and glare of Folkestone.
Yes, I suppose so.
And so unexpected. Her invitation took me quite by surprise.
Dear Agatha was born taking people by surprise in Goodwood Week, I believe, with an ambassador staying in the house who hated babies so thoroughly like her. Mrs. Valpy, please excuse the sudden question. Are you a widow?
I really can't say with any certainty.
You can't say?
With any certainty. According to latest mail advices from Johannesburg, my husband was not expected by his medical attendants to last into the next week. On the other hand, a cablegram from the local mining organ to a city newspaper over here congratulates Mr. Peter Valpy on his recovery from his recent severe illness. He may by this time have joined the majority, who are powerless to resent these intrusions. But my private impression is that he's sitting up and taking light nourishment in increasing doses.
How extremely unsatisfactory.
Really, Mr. Bevel, I think if anyone is to mourn Mr. Valpy's continued existence, I should be allowed that privilege.
Oh, indeed. My objection to Mr. Valpy's inconvenient vitality is entirely impersonal. If you were in a state of widowhood, there would be no obstacle to your marrying Trevor.
Marrying Trevor? Oh, really, this is interesting.
I confess that my solicitude is not so much to see you married to my nephew as to see him married to somebody.
Indeed?
Briefly, the gist of the business is this. Like most gifted young men, Trevor has a mother.
Oh, I fancy I know that already. Hortensia, Mrs. Bevel, is not exactly one of those things that one can hide under a damask cheek, or whatever the saying is.
Hortensia is a very estimable woman, but most estimable women are apt to be a little trying. Without pretending to an exhaustive knowledge on the subject, I should say Hortensia was the most trying woman in Somersetshire. Probably, without exaggeration, one of the most trying women in the west of England. She began her marriage to my late brother Edward by becoming a power in the household, in a very short time, the only power, a sort of Catherine II of Russia, without any of Catherine's redeeming vices. More coffee. I need some more coffee.
Thank you. An uncomfortable sort of person to live with.
Hortensia engaged and dismissed gardeners, decided which of the under-gamekeepers might marry, regulated the speed at which perambulators might be driven through the village street. Alma and chess were forbidden on Sundays for fear of setting a bad example to the servants.
If servants knew how often the fear of leading them astray by bad example holds us back from desperate wickedness, I'm sure they would ask for double wages. Thank you.
Hortensia's gubernatorial energies overflowed the limits of the estate and the parish. She became a sort of minor power in the moral and political life of the county, not to say the nation. I am a prospective parliamentary candidate.
Oh.
She has quarrelled with the Macedonian policy of every successive government.
How trying.
Then something happened, which we had left out of our calculations. Edward caught a chill out otter hunting, and in less than a week, Hortensia was a widow. There seemed a rainbow of consolation to irradiate our grief. Trevor was 20 years of age, and in the natural course of things, he would soon be absolute master of Bryony, and the relict of Edward Bevel would be denuded of her despotic terrors and become merely a tiresome old woman. A town in August, or the bite of a camel, a painful experience which might be avoided with a little ordinary prudence.
But in fact,
Edward had left the management of the estate and the control of his entire and very considerable fortune to Hortensia until such time as Trevor should take unto himself a wife.
Uh-huh.
That was 6 long years ago, and Trevor is still unmarried, unengaged, not even markedly attracted towards any eligible female.
Oh, dear. I don't wonder that you're in favour of the marital solution.
Mrs. Valpy, there is no one in the estate or in the family who doesn't include it in his or her private litany of daily wants. But a touch of real genius is required, and that is why I appeal to you to help us.
I suppose Agatha considers herself in the running.
Agatha? Agatha's one of those unaccountable people who, when you want to think out some complicated problem, will come and sit by your side and read through an entire bulb catalogue to you with explanatory comments of her own. No.
And what about Miss Hennessy?
Oh, Claire. Well, she's a rattling good sort in her way, and at one time I used to hope that she and Trevor might hit it off. I think in his own sleepy way he was rather attracted to her. Unfortunately, she's the favourite grandniece and prospective heiress of old Mrs. Packington. You've heard of Mrs. Packington?
No. Who is she?
She lives near Bath. She's fabulously rich.
Oh?
And she's been fabulously ill for longer than any living being can remember. I believe she caught a chill at Queen Victoria's coronation and never let it go again. The most human thing about Mrs. Packington is her dislike for Hortensia. She has more than once, with her dying breath, cautioned Claire against intercourse with this house and its inhabitants. So, you see.
Awfully provoking, isn't it? What about Sybil Beaumont?
Ah, Sybil is the one ray of hope that I can see on the horizon. Personally, she's rather too prickly in her temperament to suit me.
However, she is clever enough to keep that side of her character to the wall whenever Trevor is alongside, I notice.
True. But even so, the relentless daily round at Bryony doesn't give us much help in creating an atmosphere for romance, does it?
But could we get up something that would supply a few more openings? Why not theatricals?
Theatricals? At Bryony? You might as well suggest a massacre of Christian villagers.
I'll give it up.
Dear Mrs. Roffey, you must on no account give it up. I rely so much on your tact and insight and experience. You must think of something.
Well, we're to concentrate on Sybil?
Sybil, certainly. And, of course, if there's anything I can do to back you up. Here she is with Claire. No, I don't know that part of Switzerland. No, I once spent a winter at St. Moritz.
You needn't pretend you're discussing Swiss health resorts. You were discussing Trevor and possible Mrs. Trevor's. It's our one subject of discussion here. It's a frightfully absorbing subject, especially for me. Why for you especially, Sybil? Oh, well, Claire...
We did touch on the subject, I admit.
I was just suggesting a little departure from the usual routine of life here. But it seems that Mrs. Bevel is rather against any of the more promising forms of entertainment.
We've had the annual Harvest Thanksgiving.
Harvest Thanksgiving?
Yes, it's one of our rural institutions. We get our corn and most of our fruit from abroad, but we always assemble the local farmers and tenantry to give thanks for the harvest. So broad-minded of us.
Is Mrs. Bevel never absent at dinner parties or anything of that sort? A little impromptu frolic is sometimes a great success.
Now, if you're going to plot anything illicit, I must really leave you. Hortensia is not in very great demand as a dinner guest, but she is taking me tomorrow to a meeting and reception at Panfold in connection with the opening of a free library there. Oh. Shan't be home much before midnight. It's a fairly long drive. I understand. I entirely disapprove.
This threatens to be rather sporting. What have you got up your sleeve?
Oh, nothing. But only, why not beat up your men and girlfriends at short notice and have a Cinderella?
Oh!
There's a lovely floor in the morning room and a good piano, and you could have a scratch supper.
And how about when Hortensia returns?
We're playing to win. It's a sort of coup d'etat. With the fun and excitement of the dancing and the music and, of course, the sitting out places. And, above all, the charming sense of doing something wrong. The betting is that Trevor will be engaged to one of you girls before the night's out.
Oh, I say.
And then the morrow can be left to take care of itself.
Hello, you idle people. I'm just going to arrange the flowers.
Are you, Agatha? Why?
Well, I always do when I'm here.
We're plotting to have a little impromptu dance here tomorrow night while Mrs. Bevel is in Panfold.
Oh, you dear things. How delightful.
There's all the Abingdon house party. They'll be dead nuts on it. And Evelyn Bray plays dance music like a professional.
What a lovely joke.
I say,
let's make it a fancy dress affair while we're about it.
My dear Agatha, I'm not one of the babes in the wood yet, so please stop covering me with your leaves.
There wouldn't be time for fancy dress.
But why not make it a street pillowcase dance?
What?
It's quite simple. Everyone drapes themselves in sheets, with a folded pillowcase arranged as a headdress and a little linen mask. No trouble. And at a given time, everyone sheds their masks and headgear, and the sheets make a most effective sort of Greek costume. Lulu, Duchess of Belverton, gave quite a smart sheet and pillowcase at Bovary the other day.
Was it respectable?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, do take your blessed bramble bush somewhere else.
No,
please leave my skirt where it is. I only want the brambles removed.
That's the worst of briars.
It is, and if one has a tame thicket following one about the house.
Well, I shall go and do the dining room vases now, and leave you irritable things to work out the dance programme.
Agatha would be almost tolerable in the Arctic, where the vegetation is restricted.
Look here. I'll bike over to the Abingdons and get things in marching order over there. I've just time before lunch. Oh, you're going to help us, I suppose, Claire?
Oh, if you're all bent on having a domestic earthquake, I'll stand in with you.
Oh, you dear old thing.
If you call me dear old thing, I shall allude to you in public as a brave little woman. Oh, so Claire. There.
Well, if you two are going to start sparring, I shall go and write letters.
That woman looks at me sometimes in a way that's almost malicious. What on earth did Agatha bring her down here for?
Mrs. Valpy is somewhat of a rough diamond, no doubt. Oh, do invite a few people, old thing.
Ooh! See you at lunch.
So many people who are described as rough diamonds turn out to be merely rough paste.
That girl, Agatha. I think I'm a patient man.
Be careful where you sit, Trevor. Agatha has been here.
I've just had about a wheelbarrow load of gorse prickles removed from the cosy corner in the smoking room.
Gorse prickles?
Agatha said it was a Japanese design. If it had been an accident, I could have forgiven it. I say, Claire, do you know you've got rather beautiful eyes?
How should I know? You've never mentioned it before.
Oh, well, I noticed it long ago. It takes ages to put my thoughts into words.
By the time it occurs to you to tell me that I've got a nice profile, I shall probably have developed a double chin.
And that'll be the time when you'll be pleased at being told you've got a nice profile. And you know, Claire, you've got the most charming hand in the world. Because it's a friendly hand.
Oh, hello, you two. Have I been telling you your fortune?
He's been explaining the fingerprint system of criminal investigation. Oh, by the way, Trevor, you've got to be let into a conspiracy that Mr. Ludovic isn't supposed to know anything about.
Oh? It's your despotic mother who mustn't get wind of the plot. I am merely the innocent bystander.
Did you ring, sir?
Oh, yes, just arrange the flowers properly, will you, William?
Yes, sir.
I'm awfully fond of my mother, of course.
Exactly. Though I have to say that her constant supervision of the political affairs of the neighbourhood is extremely embarrassing to the party. Yes, it's very neat, William.
Sir?
Mrs. Babble is crossing the hall, sir.
Yeah, the factory system of East Prussia presents many interesting points of comparison. Hortensia.
William, what are you doing here?
Arranging the flowers, ma'am.
They don't want arranging every day. They were arranged only yesterday.
It was brought on prematurely, ma'am.
Agatha, Hortensia, I told William to put things straight a bit.
I see. And where is Adolphus?
The cockatoo, ma'am. She's drying in the pantry after her bath.
It's not his day for a bath. He always bathes on Thursday.
She seemed restless, as if she wanted it, ma'am.
In future, remember, he bathes on Thursdays only. And William?
Yes, ma'am?
I think I've spoken about it before. You always hear me allude to the cockatoo as he, or Adolphus. Therefore, you are not to speak of him in the feminine gender.
Yes, ma'am.
A quiet-mannered boy and always behaves reverently at prayers, but I'm afraid he's inclined to be opinionated. What covert's you shooting this afternoon, Trevor?
The other side of the long plantation.
I understand that you are employing one of the Brady boys as a beater.
Yes.
I do not approve of the selection. Kindly discontinue his services.
But, Mother, the
Bradys are dreadfully poor.
Not deservingly poor. Mrs. Brady is the most thriftless woman in the parish. Some people can't help being poor, but Mrs. Brady is poor as if she enjoyed it.
Hortensia, Mrs. Brady is rich in relatives. She has a husband and one or two uncles, and at least three brothers, and they all have votes.
Trevor, oblige me by taking an amended list of beaters to the headkeeper, with the Brady boy left out. Go on, or you will forget.
As you will, Mother. He made a very good beater, you know.
But not a suitable one. Who is this Mrs. Fulpey that Agatha has brought down? I don't care for the look of her.
I believe Agatha met her at Folkestone.
That doesn't make it any better. She may be merely a husband-hunting adventuress. Agatha ought to be more careful.
Wouldn't it be as well, in view of such dangers, if Trevor were to bestir himself to find a suitable wife?
Nothing of the sort. Trevor is far younger than his years, and there is no need to suggest marriage to him for a long while to come.
Trevor may have his own views on the subject.
Hitherto he has expressed none. I must go and write to the bishop.
About Trevor?
No. About the Dean of Minehead.
What has the Dean been doing?
He has treated me with flippancy.
My dear Hortensia, the Dean of Minehead is one of the few churchmen in these parts who give us political support. It would be rather unfortunate to fall out with him.
In my opinion, it would be still more unfortunate to tolerate flippancies on serious subjects from clerical clowns.
I might just as well join the other party. If there was another party in these parts.
Sir, Mr. St. Gall is on the terrace, sir.
Really? Oh, what on earth brings him down here? Bring the Madeira out there, will you?
Very good, sir.
Renee!
I've lost my mother, Ludo.
Do I understand you to mean that your mother is dead?
Oh, nothing so hackneyed. I don't think my mother will ever die as long as she can get credit. She was a Wartleford, you know, and the Wartlefords never waste anything.
Oh.
No, she simply disappeared, and I was wired for. I've been in town. I was to have had two new lounge suits tried on this morning for the first time. Naturally, I'm a bit upset.
But aren't you doing anything about it?
Oh, everything that could be done at short notice. We've notified the police and consulted a crystal gazer. And we've told the dairy to send half a pint less milk every day till further notice. I can't think of anything else to do. It's the first time I've lost a mother, you know.
But I saw her in church only last Sunday.
I expect they'd looked for her there.
Renee.
I do think you might show a little kindness to a poor grass orphan. My only source of income has disappeared without leaving a postal address. Now, Ludovic, if you'd only do what you sometimes half promise to do and make me your personal private secretary to tell female deputations that they can't see you because you're in your bath...
My dear boy, I'm not at the present moment a member of Parliament. I'm not even standing as a candidate.
But, Ludo, why aren't you? You can easily afford it. And it isn't a difficult job. All one has to do is to boil with indignation at discreet intervals over something. The Jews in Russia... or impurity in beer, or lawlessness in the Church of England.
Thank you very much for coaching me, but an indispensable preliminary to all this brilliance is that I should be elected.
Well, you could easily get a seat down here if you wanted to.
My dear René, under present circumstances, Hortensia would speak at my meetings, pledge me to the most appalling social and political doctrines. By the time election day came round, I should feel inclined to vote against myself. Oh, thank you, John.
Oh, Ludovic, this Hortensia business is getting to be absurd. When are you going to get Trevor married and the old woman dethroned? Thank you.
Well, see to it now.
Hush.
I've never been outdoors so early. The grass looks as if it's been left out all night.
Ludovic, I want you to read my letter to the bishop. Oh, Mr. St. Gall, I didn't know the neighbourhood was honoured with your presence. I needn't ask if you're on holiday. That is a permanent condition with you, I believe.
Mr. St. Gall has lost his mother. She's disappeared.
Disappeared? What an extraordinary thing to do. Had she any reasons for disappearing?
Oh, several. But my mother would never do anything for a reason.
I've asked St. Gall to stay for lunch. I suppose we can give him a bite of something.
I'm always glad to show hospitality to your friends, Ludovic.
Chin-chin.
I'll read you my letter to the bishop when your judgment is less clouded with Madeira. I'm just going to see Laura Gubbings. She's going out to Afghanistan as a missionary, you know.
I say, can't she take me with her?
I don't really see in what capacity you could be included in a mission party.
I could give my famous imitation of a Nautch girl. That would fetch the Afghans in shoals, and then Miss Gubbins could hold overflow meetings and convert them.
A Nautch girl?
Yes, I did it for some friends at St. Petersburg, and they just loved it. They said I got as far east as anyone could be expected to go.
Miss Gubbins is going out with a religious mission, not with a café chantant.
Another avenue of employment closed to me. By the way, where is Trevor? I'd want him to lend me some sleeve links.
Oh, you'll probably find him in the head keeper's lodge. Lunch is at one, sharp.
I say.
Oh, Sparrowby.
I wish you'd do something to help me.
Sparrowby, have you been hiding in the privet again? Are you looking for a stray relative?
Oh, no. I haven't lost anyone. Quite the reverse, dear old chap. I've found her.
Oh, no, not Mrs. St. Gall.
Mrs. St. Gall? Dear, no. No. I found the one woman I could ever want to make my wife, and I want you to help me.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm rather occupied these days, you know, but on Wednesday next...
Oh, but one can't fix a precise time for that sort of thing.
Yes, who is the lady?
Sybil Beaumont.
Oh, impossible. Out of the question. Huh? You mustn't think of marrying Sybil Beaumont.
But I can think of nothing else. Why mustn't I marry her?
You must dismiss the matter completely from your mind. You go fishing in Norway or fall in love with a chorus girl.
But what else is the objection? Surely there's no madness in her family.
Madness? No. Oh, though her father does live at West Kensington.
West Kensington? Mm. But then what is this mysterious obstacle?
Well, are you quite sure that you're free to pay court to Miss Beaumont? I mean, what about Miss Clifford?
Agatha Clifford? You must be dreaming.
I thought I saw you both on rather intimate terms at breakfast this morning.
She upset a sardine onto my knees. It ruined a pair of flannel trousers.
Well, I expect her sardine was just as irrevocably damaged. Anyway, you condoned her action. I heard you tell her that it didn't matter.
Well, I had to say that. What else could one say?
Well, you must remember that women attach more importance to these trifles than we do. Huh? Now, believe me, I have watched your perhaps unconscious attentions to Miss Clifford with interest, and if anything I can do...
No, but I assure you, I have absolutely no...
Everyone whom we've asked is coming, and Cook has been given a dark hint. Oh, I forgot. You weren't to know anything about it.
I assure you I heard nothing. And Agatha, Mr. Sparrowby wants you to help him to dig up some ferns for a rockery he's making at home. I must just skip along to the library.
By all means, let's go now. I love rooting up ferns. Here are some baskets.
Oh.
And a fork.
But it's nearly lunchtime, and I don't really want to make a rocket.
There's sure to be something cold that we can peck at if we're late. Come on, the trowels are in the tool shed. I know a lovely damp wood where we can grub about for hours.
But I've got rheumatism.
So have I. Come on.
Oh.
Going awfully flat.
A frightful fizzle.
Oh, and we shall be cleared out in a batch tomorrow like Chinese coolies. Trevor, why on earth don't you marry and get rid of this one-woman rule at Bryony?
I suppose I shall marry somebody someday, but it's the choosing business that's so beastly complicated.
Well, you should just have a look round at the girls you know and like and make your choice from one of them. There's Agatha, for instance.
Ah, she just passed through the hall. Now, if I'm to ask her to marry me, I'd better go and do it now before I forget.
Oh, don't go and propose to her just because I suggested it. I mean, Agatha doesn't exhaust the list. There's Claire. for instance. She's got some good points, don't you think?
You don't say so with much conviction.
Oh, I'm awfully good pals with Claire, but that doesn't prevent me from recognising that she's got a rather queer temper at times. The things she says sometimes are simply hateful. Oh, I say. Trevor.
I nearly went off to sleep. Oh, please excuse my manners. I was up awfully early this morning.
Well, do keep awake now. We're in the middle of a most interesting conversation.
Let's see. You were recommending me to marry Claire Hennessy.
Oh, no. I don't think I went as far as that. Claire and I are first-rate pals, but I'd be rather sorry for her husband all the same. No, I wish I could find you someone really nice. Someone who would enter into all your pursuits.
I hate that sort.
Do you? Really? Oh. Well, you don't give me much help.
What do you think of Mrs. Vulpe?
What? That woman with nasturtium-coloured hair and barmaid manners? Oh, surely you're not attracted by her.
I didn't say I was. I asked you what you thought of her.
Oh.
Sybil?
Hmm?
I want to tell you something.
Oh.
Something that concerns you alone.
Oh, what is it?
Your hair's coming down behind.
Oh, bother. Oh, it's that horrid hood arrangement. I'll fly upstairs and put it right. I say, Trevor, there's a much nicer sitting out place on the landing near that old carved press where the tiresome Sparrowby person won't find me. Come up in 2 minutes' time. There's a dear.
Righto.
Now, don't go to sleep.
Oh, no.
Everything's going swimmingly. It's a huge success. Swimmingly.
Going rather flat, isn't it?
Frightful fizzle. I'm so sleepy myself that I can only just keep my eyes open. I was up at the farm awfully early this morning.
Trevor, I'm going to ask you an extremely personal question.
Oh?
Are you happy?
Immensely.
Oh, are you? Why?
A temperamental accident. I've nothing to worry me, no money troubles, no responsibilities. Why should I be anything else but happy?
You ought to marry.
You think that would improve matters?
It would elevate you. Suffering is a great purifier.
You're not a very tempting advocate of matrimony.
I don't recommend it except in desperate cases. Yours is distinctly a desperate case.
By Jove, almost forgot. I'd promised to go upstairs. Sybil will be fuming her head off.
Sorry, Trevor. Why aren't you rigged out like the rest of us, St. Gaul?
Well, for one thing, I'm in platonic mourning, having partially lost a mother, so it would hardly be the thing. And another reason is that the hood arrangement would ruffle one's hair so.
As if that mattered a bit. It doesn't take me 2 minutes to do my hair.
Isn't that a proverb? A fool and his hair are soon parted.
I say, you're beastly rude.
I know I am. My mother was a Wattleford, and the Wattlefords have no manners. I'm sorry I called you a fool, though, because I want you to do something really kind for me.
Oh?
Trevor has suggested a game of bridge, and the trouble is that I haven't a coin worth speaking about on me.
I dislike lending on principle. It generally leads to unpleasantness.
Oh, really? This worship of mammon is getting to be the curse of the age. I know a lady of somewhat mature age who took rather a fancy to me last season, and in a fit of sheer absence of mind, she lent me £10. I declare she thinks more of that lost tenner than of the hundreds and hundreds that she's never lent me. It's her one subject of conversation whenever we meet.
Don't you intend paying her back?
Certainly not. Her loss makes her beautiful. It brings an effective touch of tragedy into an otherwise empty life.
Oh, where is Sybil Beaumont? She's been sitting out about 4 dances with Trevor. It's about my turn now.
Sybil has got a bad headache. She's lying down for a few minutes.
Where? I particularly want to see her.
In the billiard room, and she particularly doesn't want to see anyone.
But I only want to...
Agatha! Sparrowby is complaining that he's got no one to dance with.
No.
Come along. They're just going to try that new Paris dance. I can't pronounce it.
But I can't dance it.
Neither can I. Come on.
Oh, but I say, Agatha...
Thank goodness he's out of the way. People who make a principle of not lending money are social pests.
This is going to be a dismal failure.
Oh, by the way, have you seen Trevor anywhere?
Yes, he turned rather giddy with the dancing, I suppose, so he's taking a turn or two out in the air.
Is he alone?
Oh, quite. Oh, so am I, for the moment. Do stay and talk to me.
You must be interesting, then.
I'm going to say something quite personal and interesting. Will you marry me? The question is sudden, I admit, but these things are best done suddenly.
The answer is equally sudden. It's no. I didn't know that marrying was in your line.
It isn't. But you do have a rich great-aunt who is childless. No, I dislike the idea of wives about a house. They accumulate dust. Ah, well, I may as well tell you before you find out. Trevor isn't out of doors. He's sitting out with Sybil somewhere on the landing.
You beast! Why did you tell me he'd gone out?
Well, the fact of the matter is, I thought that if those two were left together undisturbed for half an hour or so, one or other of them might propose.
Oh, that's the game, is it? I don't see why I shouldn't be in the running as well as anyone else.
Exactly what William was saying to me this morning.
William? The page boy?
Yes, he's rather keen on seeing you, Mrs. Trevor Bavel.
That's very sweet of him.
It's not altogether disinterested. It seems they've got a half-crown sweepstake on the event in the servants' hall, and he happened to draw you.
And is William good enough to consider that I have a fair sporting chance of pulling it off?
He said you didn't seem to try as hard as some of the others were doing.
How upsetting for him.
Therapy can't really dance, you know. You don't look as if you're enjoying yourself, Claire, if I may say so.
Well, a horrid mess this evening's going to land us all in. I daren't think of tomorrow. I remember a country fete at Crocombe where Hortensia vetoed the project of a maypole dance by children of 6 and 7 years old until absolutely assured that the sexes would dance apart. Well, some of the smaller children were rather ambiguously dressed and were too shy to tell us their names. And the curate and I had a long and delicate task. 1 4-year-old baffled our most patient researches and finally had to dance by itself round a maypole of its own.
I'm beginning to get dreadfully frightened about tomorrow.
Oh, well, let us go and dance on the edge of our volcano. Come on, Agatha.
Oh, don't. I feel quite creepy. It reminds me of that Duchess person's fall on the eve of Waterloo.
By the way, where is that dear boy Trevor?
I believe he's upstairs, and I don't think he wishes to be disturbed.
I suppose that means that you are sitting here in the hall waiting to catch him when he comes down, and that you don't want to be disturbed.
Oh, please put that construction on it if it amuses you. I shouldn't like to think you weren't enjoying yourself.
Oh, I'm enjoying myself right enough, Miss Hennessy. It is Miss Hennessy, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Oh, well, only that I've seen you before, you know, though you probably didn't see me. You were writing your name in the visitor's book at the Grand Anchor Hotel at Bristol just about 6 weeks ago.
How clever of you to remember.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith of London. Your companion had gone upstairs with the luggage, so I didn't see Mr. Smith.
It sounds rather crude and compromising, as you put it, but the explanation is not really very dreadful. Only I don't see that my travelling adventures are any particular concern of yours.
Perhaps you're right. And, Mr. Trevor, you won't mind if I let him into our little secret about the Smith menage?
Mrs. Valpy, what particular gratification do you find in threatening to make mischief? I don't really see what you expect to gain by it.
Simply, my dear girl, we happen to be interested in the same man.
You can scarcely regard yourself as a competitor.
I've been a lonely woman since the day I married Peter Valpy. And now he's as good as gone, I don't intend being lonely any more.
Someone's coming downstairs. Shall we go and see how the dancing is going on?
Oh, yes, let's go, by all means.
I say, it's getting nearly time to call this off.
Oh, nonsense, it's only just 10.
Well, half an hour more, then.
Oh, Lord, here's that pestering idiot again.
Oh, Sybil, at last I found you. Are you better?
Better?
I was told you were lying down in the billiard room with a bad headache.
Well, who on earth told you that?
Wilson Gall.
Really? Oh, never believe a word he says. I'm in my usual health, but I'm frightfully hungry. Trevor, do go and forage for something edible.
I'll go and parley with cook.
What have you been doing all this time?
Sitting upstairs with Trevor, actually, and trying to keep him from going to sleep.
Oh, Miss Beaumont, you don't know how much I love you.
Well, of course I don't. I've only got your word for it that you care in the least bit for me. Now, if you were to do something to prove it...
I'd do anything.
Well, do something that would give you a name in the world. You could invent a new system of scoring at county cricket, or breed a new variety of fox terrier.
But it would take years and years to produce a new variety.
Well, I would wait. Oh, so patiently.
Oh, Sibyl. If I was successful in breeding a new kind of fox terrier, would you really marry me?
Oh, I wouldn't exactly marry you, but I would buy some of the puppies from you.
Oh, I wonder if you have a heart at all.
Well, of course I've got all the usual fittings. It's very rude of you to suggest that I'm jerry-built. But look here, joking apart, do something to oblige me. Go and dance with poor Evelyn Bray. She's been at the piano all evening.
If I do, will you give me a dance afterwards?
Oh, I'll give you two.
You angel. I wish you'd always be as kind.
Oh, I'm getting ravenous. Oh, Lord.
Hello, Sybil. Have you seen Trevor?
No, I think he's dancing.
He hasn't been in the dancing room for about an hour. Neither have you.
I say. Oh, look. Do go and help Evelyn at the piano. She's getting quite fagged out, poor child.
I just played them a polka. Evelyn hasn't been near the piano for the last half hour. If you hadn't been sticking to Trevor like a drowning leech, you might have known that.
I haven't been sticking to him, and leeches don't drown anyway. Why is it that plain women are always so venomous?
Oh, if you're going to be introspective, my dear.
All I could raise was some cold rice pudding and a bottle of pickled walnuts. If there's anything I detest in this world, it's rice pudding.
I loathe rice pudding. It's so wholesome. On the other hand, I simply adore pickled walnuts.
Won't you have some, Sybil?
I'm not going to stay here to be insulted. I've been called a liar and a leech.
I said fibber, my dear, not a liar.
Have you two been having a slanging match?
Oh, no. Only poor Sybil is so dreadfully short-tempered. She's a dear, sweet girl, but I should be awfully sorry for any fellow who married her. That reminds me, Trevor, you ought to marry.
Have you anything to say against Mrs. Vulpe?
Good heavens! Mrs. Vulpe? That vulgar, overdressed parrot with the manners of a cockney sparrow... Surely you can't be thinking seriously of her.
I asked if you had anything to say against her, considering the short notice you managed very well.
No. The woman for you must be one with great similarity of tastes.
On the contrary, do you realise you've finished all the pickled walnuts?
My dear Trevor.
There's not one left.
Oh, Trevor, not one.
No. No. The woman I marry must have an unbridled appetite for rice pudding.
I dare say... Some rice pudding, nicely cooked, wouldn't be bad eating.
That is not the spirit in which my ideal woman must approach rice pudding. She must eat it with an avidity that will almost create scandal. Oh. She must devour it secretly in dark corners. She must buy it in small quantities from chemists on the plea that she has neuralgia. Oh. Such a woman I could be happy with. Now watch that pudding spoon. How can I discuss anything seriously when you're covering me with fragments of rice pudding?
Oh, you poor dear. I'm so sorry. Let me rub you down.
No, don't. I won't be massaged with rice pudding.
What are you two people playing at?
Only trying to find new uses for cold rice pudding.
Huh. Rene is just going to do his Nautch Girl dance. He wants you to go and play tom-tom music, Agatha.
Bother, Rene. Why was I born good-natured?
William.
Sir?
Just clear these things away, William. I should like my mother to find the hall in something bordering its usual state. I must clean up.
William, can you find me any more peaches?
No, sir, I brought you the last.
Well, try to discover a fig or banana somewhere, do.
Yes, sir. You don't know of no one wanting a page, do you, sir?
Why? Are you thinking of leaving?
I expect I shall have to leave without having to do any thinking about it, sir. When Mrs. Bavel comes to hear about our goings-on behind her back, she'll behave like one of those cyclops that sweeps away all villages.
Cyclone, William, not cyclops.
That's it, sir, a cyclone. And I expect I shall be among the sweepings. I've no particular fancy to be going home out of a situation just now, sir. With respect, sir, you haven't known what it was like to be brought up by respectable parents.
Really?
My father is Plymouth Brethren, sir. Not that I've anything to say against Plymouth as a religion, but in a small cottage it takes up a lot of room. My father believed in smiting sin wherever he found it. What I complained of was that you always seemed to find it in the same place. Plymouth narrows the perspective. Between gentry religion and cottage religion, there's the same difference as between keeping ferrets and living in a nutch with one. Excuse me, sir.
Excuse me.
You slacker, Rennie. Come and join in.
I'm a far too tidy a disposition to leave half-emptied bottles lying about. Oh, did I hear wheels? I fancied I heard wheels. Oh, my nerves are getting quite jumpy.
Ludovic, quick, catch the carriage. I've left my pamphlets and notes in it. Mr. St. Gaul, may I ask what you are doing here at this hour?
Such a silly mistake.
I hear music.
I've been thinking I heard harps in the air all evening.
Ludovic!
What is happening?
Something disgraceful is taking place in this house.
We were having games.
Old English games.
Charades.
Historical charades.
Yes.
Historical charades.
La 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 la.
May I ask who has organized this abominable and indecent orgy in my house?
On the spur of the moment.
The spur of the moment. A moment, be it observed, when I happen to be temporarily absent. And knowing my strong objection to promiscuous dancing, you choose this moment for indulging in an aggravated and indecent kind of dance, which I can only describe as a brawl.
But, dear Mrs. Bevel, I assure you there is nothing indecent in a sheet and pillowcase dance. Lulu, Duchess of Dulverton, gave one a brawl.
Lulu, Duchess of Dulverton, is not a person whose behavior or opinions will be taken as a pattern at Bryony. As long as I am mistress here. While you are still under my roof, Mrs. Valpy, I trust you will endeavor to remember that fact. Whether after this deplorable error of taste you will see fit to prolong your visit, of course I don't know.
I think, considering the mental anxiety and strain through which I am passing, with a husband hovering between Johannesburg and heaven, I'm being most unfairly treated.
I've refrained from complaining, Agatha, at the inconsiderate way in which you bring hedge weeds and garden refuse into the house, but I must protest against your introducing individuals of the type of Mrs. Valpy as guests at Bryony. Who is that playing the piano?
I think it's Evelyn Bray.
Oh, who dropped in accidentally, I suppose. Ludwig, will you kindly tell Miss Bray that we don't require any more music this evening?
Yes, I'll tell her.
I may inform you, Mr. St. Gaul, that the mayor took upon himself to cancel the reception at the town hall, at which I was to have delivered a brief address, in order to show respect and sympathy at the sudden disappearance of Mrs. St. Gaul.
I say, that was rather pet lamb of him.
I am a persistent advocate of the abolition of corporal punishment in the Navy and in board schools, but I must confess, Mr. St. Gaul, that a good birching inflicted on you would cause me no displeasure.
I should insist on its being done in camera.
Oh, really, Mrs. Bevel, we must plead guilty to having planned this semi-promptu affair just a little, but we thought it would be such a good occasion for making an announcement.
An announcement?
What announcement?
An announcement that I'm provisionally, engaged.
Engaged? Oh, Sybil, you angel, let me announce it.
Sybil and I are engaged.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, no, you misunderstand me. I'm not engaged, do you hear?
Oh, but Sybil, you just said you were.
You fool. I was talking about something quite different.
Oh. There seems to be some confusion about this wonderful announcement. William, what are you carrying there? William?
A banana, ma'am.
What are you doing with a banana at this time of night?
It's for her, him, the cockatoo, ma'am.
For Adolphus, at 11:15. He's never fed at this hour.
He seemed disturbed and restless, as if he was asking for something, ma'am.
Disturbed? I am not surprised. In the 14 years that he has lived here, he has never experienced such an evening of disgraceful disorder. Have Mr. Ludwig to the dining room. Some beef and pickled walnuts and a few peaches.
Yes, ma'am.
Those of you who are at present my guests will kindly retire to their sleeping apartments. Tomorrow I shall have a good deal to say on the subject of these deplorable proceedings. Tonight, I am too upset. I left Bryony, an orderly English home. I return to find it a casino.
Hello, Ludwig. I saw Hortensia go out to the rose garden, so I skipped down.
Shall I warm some of the breakfast dishes for you, miss?
No. Just make me some fresh tea and leave the ham and sardines. I don't see any butter.
Your sleeve's in the butter, miss.
Oh, so it is. And you might bring in some more toast.
Yes, miss.
Isn't there any honey?
Your other sleeve's in the honey.
Oh, bother. I say, did you breakfast with Hortensia? Was she very awful?
She told me she'd lain awake most of the night, boiling with indignation. She's now in the hard-boiled state of cold vindictiveness.
Mercy on us. Tell cook.
Yes, miss?
In case I should be travelling later in the day, to cut me some ham sandwiches. No mustard.
Yes, miss.
Morning, John.
Morning, Miss Clare.
Morning, everybody.
Morning, Claire.
Have you brave things breakfasted with Hortensia?
No, only Ludwig. He reports her as being pretty bad.
Morning.
Morning.
Is the coast clear? I'm scared to death of meeting that Gorgon again.
Had breakfast.
Oh, nothing worth speaking of. Oh, is there tea? Oh, how adorable.
Ah, a gathering of the walking wounded, eh? Presumably that's safe to
know. It isn't. Oh, good morning. Did it rain in the night? So good for the garden.
I lay awake most of the night. I did not hear any rain.
Oh, so sorry you didn't sleep well. Oak leaves soaked in salt water.
Thank you.
I feel that I ought to explain about last night.
You will have to explain. Everyone will have to give an account of his or her share in the disgraceful affair, including the servants who seem to have connived at it.
But the thing is,
I have ordered a gathering of the household for 4 o'clock in the library, which you will kindly attend.
Yes, ma'am.
William, at this hour of the morning, I expect the breakfast things to be cleared away.
It's the sort of peace that precedes bombardment by the Boers, isn't it? I suppose there's a general stampede.
The house resounds with the cutting of sandwiches and the writing of luggage labels. It is quieter out here. The question is whether we've not hunted Trevor into the wrong net. I've just seen that vulpy woman in full cry up to the farm. Trevor crept up there first thing. It's quite in the nature of things that Trevor will turn round and perversely commit himself to this wholly impossible person. I must speak to her about it.
Oh, she would scarcely relish being told that she's impossible.
Well, I should put it more tactfully. I should tell her that she wouldn't harmonise with local surroundings. That she has too much dash and go and... Well, help me out with some tactful attribute.
Too flamboyant.
I asked you for tact, not truth.
Too much individuality. I don't know what that means, but it sounds well.
Thank you. Yes, that'll do nicely. A woman always respects a word that she can't spell.
Oh, you better jot it all down on your cuff. You'll forget it in a sudden panic when you're talking to her.
Sir, Colonel Mutsum is here, sir. How do you do? What unpleasant weather. Quite damp. I hope dear Hortensia is well. I have a great admiration for Hortensia. I hear our member is not expected to live.
No, I saw something to that effect in the local papers.
I suppose we shall be having an election in a few weeks' time. Is it true that you are the prospective party candidate?
That will depend.
Of course Ludovic means to stand. I caught him the other day being ostentatiously sympathetic to the local chemist, a man with a hair lip and personal reminiscences, and a vote. The motive was unmistakable.
René, as a private secretary, would have to be very private.
I suppose you subscribe to all the principal items of the party programme.
Oh, I believe so. And most of the local charities. That's the really important thing. Simply astonishing, the number of institutions supported by involuntary contributions that a candidate discovers in his prospective constituency. At least he doesn't discover them, they discover him. Oh, of course, you quite understand there's no bribery in all this.
No, of course not.
Morning, Ludovic. Mm. Hello, Colonel.
Morning.
Didn't know you were here. Morning, René.
Morning.
The short horns are in full voice, but I distinctly heard you all talking politics.
Well, politics are rather in the air. Votes for women and all that.
Personally, I see no reason why women shouldn't have votes.
Oh?
They're quite unfit to have votes, but that's no argument against having them.
Mm. Oh, by the way, was there some dancing at Bryony last night?
Oh, no. Just some Shakespeare readings and a little music. I wonder you haven't asked me about land value.
I quite understand that there was a Cinderella dance.
Oh, no. Dear, no, nothing of that kind. Some Shakespeare reading. In costume.
In costume? Oh, but how very interesting. What scenes did you give?
The ghost scene from, what do you call it?
Oh, the ghost scene from Hamlet. That must have needed a lot of rehearsal.
No, we had a lot of ghosts, so that if one forgot his lines, another could go on with them.
What an odd idea. What a very odd idea. But they couldn't all have been in costume.
Well, they were. Rows of them. All in white sheets.
How very extraordinary. It couldn't have been a bit like Shakespeare.
Well, it wasn't. But it was very like Maeterlinck.
We had such a lot of asparagus in Worcestershire.
Yeah.
Mm. We got our earliest asparagus in London, then we got more down here, and then we had a late edition in Worcestershire. So we've had quite a lot this year.
The charm of that story is that it could be told in any drawing room.
I thought I saw Hortensia in the rose garden. If you don't mind, I'll go and meet her.
I expect she's happily beheading Zephyrin Druids, but do let me escort you, Colonel.
You've heard the story that's going about. Trevor, people are saying that you and Sparrowby proposed to the same girl and that Sparrowby threatened to break your neck if you didn't give way to him.
I might break Sparrowby's neck.
Well, no one could have any reasonable objection to that. Sparrowby is one of those people who would be enormously improved by death. Unfortunately, he is your guest. But if Sybil's bespoke, well, I'm not one of those who run the Vulpy down just because she's a trifle too flamboyant for the general taste. She'd be more at her ease at a suburban race meeting than at a country garden party, but still... Oh, the exasperating dolts. I don't know how matchmaking mothers manage to grow fat on the business. A week of this would wear me to a shadow.
Hello. Where's René off to?
Gone to console himself with a further banana, possibly.
Oh, has something been heard of his mother, then?
He seemed more concerned about finding me a suitable wife than about retrieving his lost parent.
What an excellent idea. Now there's Claire Hennessy. Now, you used to get on famously with Claire.
Claire's a very good sort.
Good sort. My dear Trevor, the schoolboy divides womankind into the decent sort and the holy horror. Now, in your case, marriage would be a considerable convenience.
What may be convenient for other people may be highly inconvenient for me.
That means You're involved in some blind alley affair with a married woman. You dally among your awfully good sorts and your dear little women, and then someone of the Mrs. Vulpy type comes along and quietly annexes you.
I seem to have been annexed to Mrs. Vulpy by popular delimitation. Critically speaking, she isn't my style at all, but I don't see anything so dreadful about her.
I don't want to run her down on the score of her rather common personality, but I do wish to warn you that she is one of those people gifted with just that sort of pushing, scheming audacity. Good morning, Mrs. Vulpy. Just that sort of pushing, scheming audacity that makes them dangerous. Once we let them wriggle their way into the Persian Gulf, they'll snap up all our commerce under our eyes.
You dreadful men always talking politics. Mr. Trevor, would you be a dear before I leave? Would you show me the model dairy as you promised?
Righto. I'll take you there now, if you like.
Oh, do please. I just love dairies and cheese making and all that sort of thing. I think it's so clever the way they make those little blue insertions in gorgonzola cheese.
Before I forget, Trevor, go and get me those trout flies you promised me. Mrs. Vulpy won't mind, I dare say, waiting for you here in a minute.
Right you are. There won't be a second.
Hmm? Mrs. Vulpy, you received a telegram this morning. The staff informed me. A telegram to say that your husband is dead, so that left you free to fulfill your real purpose and pursue Trevor for yourself.
Oh, whatever will you say next? You don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's correct enough. I read it.
How dare you intercept my correspondence?
I didn't read the intelligence in your telegram. I read it in your manner. You've just been obliging enough to confirm my deductions.
Oh! You're trying amateur detective business on me, are you? No, you look here, Mr. Ludovic. Don't you set yourself against me. Why shouldn't I marry Trevor? I'm as good as a lot of you and a bit better. Lulu, Duchess of Dulverton, and her set are a cut above the pack of you. And as for you, if you want my opinion, you're a meddling, interfering, middle-aged toad.
You asked me a moment ago why you shouldn't marry Trevor. You're supplying me with one of the reasons now. You're flying into something very like a rage. In Somerset, we never fly into a rage. We walk into one, and when necessary, we stay there for weeks, perhaps for years, but we never fly into one.
Here are all the flies I could find, Ludovic.
Ah, we've been having such an interesting talk about the age toads live to.
Yes, well, I've got all my packing to do, so we'd better not lose any more time.
Right you are. We'll go at once. We don't need any special footprints.
That woman.
Have you seen Trevor anywhere?
He was here a minute ago. I believe he's now in the dairy.
The dairy? What's he doing in the dairy?
I don't know. What does one do in dairies?
One makes butter and that sort of thing. Trevor can't make butter.
No, I don't believe he can. We spend incredible sums on technical education, but the number of people who know how to make butter remains extremely limited.
Is he alone?
I fancy Mrs. Vulpy is with him.
That cat! Why is she with him?
It's possible she's getting engaged to him. But also, I think it's quite possible that Trevor is discoursing learnedly on the amount of milk a Jersey cow can be induced to yield under intelligent treatment. Frankly, if I were a cow, I'd resent having my most private and personal actions treated as a sort of auction bridge.
Well, I've packed. Oh, dear. I haven't begun. And I must go and dig up some foxglove roots in the plantation to take away with me.
Agatha, I refuse to let you bring more than 5 cubic feet of earth, mould and stinging nettles into the carriage.
Oh, please don't start quarrelling again.
I'm fond of you, Mr. Trevor.
Not at all.
I never knew a dairy could be so interesting. All the latest improvements, such beautiful ventilation and such plain dairy maids. What it is to have a careful mother.
You weren't very long in going over it.
Oh, I had to rush it, of course. I must go and superintend my packing.
Hortensia, it's no use belting. We're cornered.
Good morning, Mrs. Bevel.
Mrs. Bevel has just been showing me the poultry yard. I've been admiring the black minockers. How many eggs did you say they've laid in the last 6 months, Hortensia?
I don't think Mrs. Vulpy is much interested in such matters.
I adore poultry. There's something so macabre about them.
Lulu, Duchess of Dulverton, keeps white peacocks.
Shall we go inside?
It was such a disappointment to us not to have had Mrs. Bevel's lecture last night. All on account of Mrs. St. Gall's extraordinary disappearance. People are talking of a suicide. Others say it's a question of eluding creditors. In any case, I feel convinced that we shan't see Mrs. St. Gall in these parts again.
I found my mother.
Mrs. St. Gall found? You've seen her?
No, but I've spoken to her. She was having a bath when I got back. Touching scene of filial piety. Return of the prodigal mother, son weeping over bathroom door handle.
Where had she been all this time?
Principally at Cardiff.
Cardiff? Whatever did she want to go to Cardiff for?
Oh, she didn't want to go. She was taken.
Taken?
She was doing a stroll on the Crowcombe Road when Frieda Tewkesbury and her husband swooped down on her in their motor car. They live at Warwick. At least they've got a house and some children there. But since they've gone mad on motoring, they spend most of their time on the highway. Frieda is always picking up her friends in that impromptu way. Of course, you can't dress for dinner, but that doesn't matter very fundamentally in Cardiff.
But surely your mother might have telegraphed to say what had become of her?
Oh, she did, from Monmouth, with long directions about charcoal biscuits for the chow's suppers. Frieda gave the wires to her husband to send off, which accounts for their never having reached us. Huh? None of the Tewkesburys have any memories. I love borrowing odd sums from Tewkesbury. Both of us are so absolutely certain to forget all about them.
And it was on account of this madcap freak that last night's function was postponed and my dress cancelled. I trust that Mrs. St. Gall showed some appreciation of the anxiety and alarm caused by her disappearance.
I don't know. I wasn't in a position to see.
Altogether a most extraordinary episode, a fitting sequel to last night's Saturnalia.
Saturnalia? But Bryony?
Dancing of a particularly objectionable character. In costumes improvised from bed linen.
Bed linen?
To an accompaniment of French songs.
French songs? But how horrible. I was told that it was merely Shakespeare readings.
I regret to say that some of the servants appear to have lent themselves to the furtherance of this underhand proceeding. Among others, it will be my unpleasant duty to ask cook to find another place.
Oh, but, Mother, isn't that being rather extreme? She's an awfully good cook.
I put conduct before cookery.
But she couldn't be expected to know that there'd be French songs.
Had she informed me of the unauthorized instructions that she had received, the mischief would have been detected and nipped in the bud.
One must see that one's orders are respected, mustn't one?
Sir?
Yes, William?
The reporter of the Wessex Courier would like to speak with you, sir.
Tell him I'm unable to see any press men at present.
He's written a question which he would feel obliged if you'd answer, sir. Here, sir.
What is the question?
He wants to know if I intend standing in the event of a parliamentary vacancy. You can tell him that I have not the remotest intention of standing.
Oh, dear.
Yes, sir.
Really, Ludovic, I think you are rather precipitate in your decisions. Subject to certain modifications of your political views, I'm distinctly anxious to see you representing this district in Parliament.
I think I may voice a very general disappointment.
There are some disappointments that are too deep to be voiced.
If you please, ma'am.
What is it?
Adolphus has laid an egg.
Oh, improper little bird.
An egg? How very extraordinary. In all the years that we've had that bird, such a thing has never happened. I must admit that I'm rather astonished. See that she has everything she wants and is not disturbed.
Yes, ma'am.
Beg pardon.
I have just been telegraphically informed that my great-aunt, Mrs. Packington, died at 9 o'clock this morning.
A great age, was she not?
A great age, and for longer than I can remember, a great invalid. At any rate, a great consumer of medicines. I scarcely think, Trevor, that it is a subject for unbridled amusement.
I'm awfully sorry, but I couldn't help it. It seemed too much.
The fact is, I was Mrs. Packington's favourite niece, and there were things in her will which I couldn't afford to have altered. On the other hand, as I dare say you know, Mrs. Bevel, she had a very special dislike for you.
I am aware of it. We had some differences of opinion during my husband's lifetime.
It was a favourite observation of hers that you reminded her of a rattlesnake in dove's plumage.
Oh, I say!
She hated Bryony and everything connected with it. And I had to keep my visits here a dark secret.
Oh, how very embarrassing.
Not at all. I like duplicity, when it's well done. But when Trevor asked me to marry him, it did become embarrassing.
To marry him?
Trevor asked you to marry him?
2 months ago. Well, Mrs. Packington wasn't expected to live for another fortnight, but she'd been in that precarious condition for 5 years. At the same time, I couldn't risk letting Trevor slip. He'd have married someone else in sheer absence of mind.
Oh, I don't altogether admit that, you know. A thing of that sort I should have remembered.
Anyhow, we married on the quiet.
By special license. It was rather fun. It felt so like doing wrong.
Do you mean to tell us that you are Mrs. Trevor Bavel?
Of Bryony, in the county of Somerset, at your service.
William?
Yes, sir. I'm here, sir.
Has that journalist man gone?
He was glancing at Adolphus.
Quick, send someone after him. Stop him. Tell him...
That in the event of a vacancy...
Mr. Ludovic Bavel...
...will place himself at the disposal of the party leaders.
Fly! Oh,
and William, tell John to bring up some bottles of Heidsieck.
Yes, miss, ma'am.
Oh, you dear old... thing, Claire. You've taken all our breaths away. I always said you and Trevor ought to make a match of it.
What a brave little woman.
Oh.
I shall put up evergreens all over the house.
On a subject of such primary importance as choosing a wife, I should have preferred and certainly expected to be consulted. I congratulate you both.
Thank you.
I trust that the new mistress of Bryony will remember that certain traditions of conduct and decorum have reigned here for a generation. I think, without making undue pretensions, that Bryony has set an example of decent domestic life to a very large neighbourhood.
My dear Hortensia, I think Bryony showed last night what it could do in the way of outgrowing traditions. Trevor and I have had plenty of time during the last 2 months to think out the main features of the new regime. We shall keep up the model dairy and the model pigsties, but we've decided that we won't be a model couple.
The Heidsieck, madam. Oh. And if you please, madam.
Yes, John?
Will the wagonette and luggage cart be required as ordered?
No, I don't think anyone will be leaving today. I shall expect you all to prolong your visits in our honour. Oh, of course, I was forgetting. Mrs. Vulpy has to go up to Tattersall's to see about some hunters. Just the dog cart, then?
Oh. I shall require the carriage for the 4:15 down. There is a conference at Exeter which I think I ought to attend.
Very well, madam.
Excuse me. Colonel?
Yes, madam. If you'll permit it, I shall accompany you to the station.
John, the Heidsieck, please. Thank you.
Oh, lovely, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, madam.
You dear things. Here's your very good health. And may you have lots and lots
Don't
of...
Don't hush.
I was going to say lots of happiness.
Oh, I was afraid you were going to lecture against race suicide.
Mr. and Mrs. Trevor Bavel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. And here's to the success of the future member for the division.
Thank you.
Coupled with that of his charming secretary.
Oh, this time, this time.
Please, miss, ma'am.
Yes?
Cook thought that as the sandwiches wouldn't be wanted for this afternoon, you might like them now. Those with mustard on the right, without on the left, sardine and egg in the middle.
Thank you.
And please, I'm asked to express the general rejoicing in the servants' hall. And cook says that if marriages are made in heaven, the angels will be for putting this one in the window as a specimen of their best work.
Thank cook and all of you very much. Trevor, may they?
Of course, certainly.
And tell John to open some Moselle in the servants' hall for you all to drink our healths. We're coming in presently to get your congratulations.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
And William?
Yes, ma'am?
How much did you win on the sweepstake?
Oh.
wants a cracker.
The Watched Pot by Saki was adapted for radio by Gabriel Wolfe. Hortensia was played by Mary Morris. Claire was Rosalind Shanks. Ludovic, Gabriel Wolfe. Mrs. Volpe, June Tobin. Renee, Malcolm James. Sybil, Emily Richard. Trevor, Alaric Cotter. Colonel, Michael Tudor Barnes. Agatha, Caroline Gruber. Sparrowby, Michael Deacon. William, Richard Pierce. And John was Norman Bird. The play was directed by Graham Gould.